Hey, what's going on? On today's episode of Locked On Raptors, it's a live show I recorded from Scotiabank Arena last night after the Game 6 loss for the Raptors to the Philadelphia 76ers by a score of 132-97. I dig into the big takeaways from the game, why James Harden deciding to be very good was the reason the Raptors came undone, and I also dig into some box score notes on the guys who played in the game with a bit of an eye on the full season evaluation, more so than just looking at their Game 6 efforts. Plus, I take listener questions at the back part from the live stream chat, and so much more, all coming up on today's episode of Locked On Raptors.
Oh, like, because when I shot, I expected to make it. So, like, I don't shoot trying to miss.
You are Locked On Raptors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to episode number 1169 of Locked On Raptors, live from inside Scotiabank Arena. Sean Woodley here with you, hopefully working. We had some tech difficulties trying to get this thing started up before. If there are any issues, please let me know in the chat. This will be the last attempt. If I can't get it working now, it's never going to work. But if it is working, thank you for being here, and we are going to dig into the Toronto Raptors Game 6 loss to the Philadelphia 76ers here at Scotiabank Arena tonight to end a really, really promising and fun season on a bit of a sour note. Again, 132-97, they go down in a pretty difficult fashion, especially with a second half and a third quarter in particular that was really, really discouraging. I saw the Raptors kind of lose the thread that really had powered them to the last couple wins, and I think really sort of had people thinking that this Raptors team was going to pull off history and take down the Sixers in a dramatic history-making fashion. That is not the case, however, and on today's show, we're going to dig into what went wrong for the Raptors, the sort of big takeaways from the run of play. We'll also run through the box score notes and sort of hand out some flowers to some guys who perform well, talk about guys who didn't perform so well in this game as well, and that'll be the sort of middle part. And then the final segment of the show, we'll take your listener questions. Please drop them in the chat if you have them, and I will answer them then. And again, trying to deal with arena Wi-Fi and all this stuff, and so if there are tech issues, please just let me know in the chat. I apologize in advance. We're working on MLSE and Rogers' dime here, so hopefully it's all good and holds up. So Raptors go down, and they lose to the Philadelphia 76ers to end the season. And we should start with the sort of big takeaway from this game, which is that I think James Harden deserves a lot of credit, and he really was the domino that sort of saw everything else fall into place for the Sixers and fall apart for the Raptors in this game. We've been talking all series long about James Harden being cooked, being totally washed, being too slow to get by guys, unable to break down Gary Trent Jr. and Malachi Flynn, and name any other Raptors defender. They've had James Harden's number to the point where they have been able, since game two, to play single coverage on James Harden and not worry about sending extra help his way and really limiting his playmaking, limiting the threes he was setting up for other guys. And in this game, James Harden found the scoring touch that he had been missing for the last couple of games here and really, really gave the Raptors problems as a result. We saw in the first quarter, he got to the rim for a missed layup early on. That was encouraging that he missed it, but he did blow by Kem Birch on a switch for that. He ended up throwing down a dunk as well in the first quarter, got to the line for a couple of free throw attempts too, and really just, you know, was doing the aggressive James Harden thing that we haven't seen really all that much outside of the first few games he played with the Sixers. Even at the start of the series, he was not blowing by anybody necessarily. The Raptors were just unnecessarily overhelping in those situations, and it was costing them on the back end with the number of open threes they were giving up, the number of times it swung to Tyrese Maxey, and he was able to drive off the catch and score at the rim. And we saw that formula for the Sixers replicate itself in this game, all because James Harden figured, all right, I guess I got to go score here. It's game six. I've been a pumpkin this whole series. And look, do I think James Harden has this in him every single game for the rest of the postseason? Do I think they stand a chance of winning the title? Not really. I think he's still limited, but credit to him. He had an awesome game in this one, and it was the reason the Raptors were put back on their heels, unfortunately. It was just a really, really nice performance. And again, it all sort of led to all these dominoes falling that just were eventually insurmountable for the Raptors. In that third quarter in particular, James Harden got into playmaker mode because he had kind of set the bar of his offense in the first half. And he was getting by guys. He was blown by Gary Trent Jr. He was blowing by Scotty Barnes. And what happened was there had to be a sub made. Chris Boucher was awesome in the first half. So was Thad Young. And pretty early in that third quarter, I think it was about the 8-minute mark, the Sixers had gotten out to a pretty healthy lead. I think it was like 80-67 or something like that when that switch came. You know, Boucher comes in, Thad comes in, Barnes and Trent go to the bench, and it led to all sorts of problems for the Raptors, and really problems that they couldn't overcome because the Sixers were kind of in the sort of positive feedback loop that they had found in games one and two. Because the Sixers were getting so many open looks out of James Harden drives in this game, it just led to the Raptors not having the math on their side to come back, especially when you had to sub out Gary Trent Jr. because he was the one getting torched by James Harden time after time. Scotty Barnes was getting bullied as well. They were running, you know, lots of actions that were getting Barnes switched onto Joel Embiid too, and that was not working super well either. Embiid was incredible in this game as well. We'll get to him. Look, I know he's a heel. I know everybody hates Joel Embiid. It's hard to really be all that mad at a good heel in the NBA. I love a good heel. It's really, really nice to have a good heel, and you know, I relish that existing, even though the Raptors were under said heel getting stepped on in this one. But back to James Harden and the way he kind of got things in motion for the Sixers. When you didn't have Gary Trent Jr. and Scotty Barnes on the floor, Trent, obviously one of their best three-point shooters, has been all season, and Barnes was one of their most eager three-point shooters in this game. He put up 7 attempts to lead the team, which is nice for him that he was aggressive and looking to get him up, but also not so nice because you don't want to be leaning so heavily on Scotty Barnes threes to uphold your offense, but it's really all they could muster. And there was just a cavalcade of factors that came into play here as well. You take those guys out and you don't get that three-point volume from those guys. You don't get Gary Trent Jr. flying around, and you just get a pretty cramped-looking offense. As much as Chris Boucher was eager to put up shots in this game, it was fantastic, and we'll get to that coming up on the other side, he does not have the three-point stroke that's going to scare the Sixers, right? And the Sixers were able to just kind of hang back, like protect the paint, wall off the paint, send extra bodies to Pascal Siakam, and the Raptors were only getting open threes out of it, and there were threes by Thad Young and Chris Boucher and Scotty Barnes, and OG Anunoby, who had a pretty rough night as well, 1 of 4, not the night you want from OG. Pascal was 0 for 4 from downtown too. Just overall, not enough three-point shooting in this game to keep pace with what the Sixers were doing on that on the other end with their three-point shooting because of what James Harden was able to do by getting downhill and then drawing that extra help because he established himself as a scorer so early on. The Sixers in this game go 16 of 40 from downtown. Harris goes 3 of 8. Danny Green goes 4 of 7. Some real daggers from Danny Green. Just a real bummer. Tyrese Maxey goes 5 of 12. Really kind of recaptured game 1 and 2 Tyrese Maxey. You know, Harden goes 2 of 5 as well. Hits a couple of pull-ups that certainly hurt. Niang goes 2 of 3. Just a really big shooting night from the Sixers, and it left the Raptors sort of forced to go and try to hunt threes at the other end. Also, they were necessitated to take threes because of what the Sixers were doing to Siakam and not allowing anything near the basket. And it just got to the point where the math was just not on their side. They could not keep up and, you know, just keep pace with the Sixers. And this was a game where, you know, I've talked this whole series, at least since the last couple games with no Fred VanVleet, about how not having Fred in this specific matchup didn't feel like a death knell, specifically because Fred's not been himself, right? He's been shooting like 29% from three since the All-Star break. He's not staying in front of guys on defense. But you saw in this game why a healthy Fred VanVleet is so necessary for this team. He's extra offensive creation, of course. When Pascal's seeing all that attention, you can swing it out and Fred can then go initiate something from the second side instead of it always just kind of having to be a three or a Gary Trent Jr. jab step or something like that. It just, that Fred spacing is so, so valuable. Also, the fact that you can run Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet pick and roll, which it's kind of been forgotten because Fred didn't really play that much down the stretch and they didn't really get to see a whole ton of it. But that Siakam Fred pick and roll, whether it's Siakam screening for Fred or Fred screening for Siakam, is just a deadly, deadly offensive weapon for the Raptors. They didn't have access to that in the series and haven't really had access to it with the diminished Fred VanVleet and with Pascal taking on so much of the playmaking burden. And in this game as well, when the Raptors were really trying to get back into this thing in the third quarter, again, as the Sixers are just pouring in threes at the other end and Bede's getting deep position and scoring at will, the only way for the Raptors to try to get offense going is through Pascal Siakam. And so the Sixers did the thing that we talked about on the last couple podcasts that I kind of theorized they might do, which was they started trapping Pascal Siakam at the very top of the pick and roll and forcing him to pass to the short roller. Imagine how different that looks if it's Pascal Siakam screening for Fred VanVleet. You have the threat of a Fred VanVleet pull-up three, of course, and you have Pascal in the short roll. Or if it's the other way around and Fred is the one who's screening for Pascal, you can't trap Fred VanVleet or Pascal Siakam in that situation because you're just giving up a wide-open Fred VanVleet three at the top of the arc. That's not what you want either if you're the Sixers. And so having no Fred in this game, as much as, you know, he was not... We're speaking about what-ifs here, because even if he had played, he wouldn't have been at the peak version of himself that we've seen all season long or saw before the All-Star break. Like, that's just not something that was accessible to the Raptors, but you saw how much that actually hurt them, and it really, really neutered the offense in the second half here. They just had no offensive flow, and the threes that they were producing, they were open looks. Pascal was making the right reads for the most part. He only had a couple of really bad turnovers in this one. He was facing a lot of duress, but you'll notice he didn't get a lot of shots up in the second half because there was just no access to the rim for him there. He was trying to make the right read, but they just didn't have enough shooters on the floor, and it was compounded by the fact that they had to have Thad Young and Chris Boucher in there in place of Scottie Barnes and Gary Trent Jr. because of the defense they were not playing on James Harden. Just a whole cavalcade of hell just broken out because James Harden decided to play good basketball, which he has not done for long stretches of this series. So credit to James Harden for that. Credit to the Sixers for an interesting game plan and, you know, just kind of sticking with what their main model is going to be if they are going to win a championship. They didn't change things up because James Harden was not playing very well. They stuck with it, saying, hey, this is the guy we traded for. He's got to do something at some point. Otherwise, we're screwed anyway. And thankfully for the Sixers, he did. And so it's a bummer for sure. You don't want to see it, but yeah, that's just the way it is. This was always the thing with this series, right? Was, you know, we talked about adjustments. The main adjustment for the Sixers, because we talked about how there were not that many of them to make, was Joel Embiid and or James Harden play like the superstars that they are, and they did, and there's just not much you can really do about that. Embiid had a massive game too, 12 of 18. He was 0-4 from 3, so he was 12 of 14 from 2, and there was a few things around the rim here and there, but it was a lot of pull-up, jab-step jumpers and things like that, and when he's making shots like that, like, what the hell are you supposed to do as the defense? You're just sitting there hoping he's missing those shots. The couple days off clearly helped the thumb, I'm guessing, when it came to the shooting touch, and when you have Embiid and Harden playing like the two best players on the floor, although I would say Pascal was probably still a little bit better than Harden, considering the burden he had, but either way, those guys played like the superstars that they are, and that's typically how it works in basketball. It's simplistic, it's reductive, but sometimes the playoffs just come down to, did the very good players play very good basketball, and if so, you're going to lose. That's a bummer, but it is what it is. That said, lots of good things to take both from this game, more so the first half than anything else. The second half was kind of a wash, but some good stuff from the first half we can dig into. And I also just want to sort of run through the box score and chat about what each of the guys in the Raptors did throughout this game. In the back part of the show, we'll take your questions. So please feel free to jump into the chat with any questions you might have. If you put them in now, they'll be in the queue and I'll get to them right away. But that'll be the back part of the show. But yeah, let's take a quick break here. On the other side, going to dig into the box score notes I have for the various members of the Raptors throughout this game. But before I do that, I want to tell you about our friends over at betonline.net, your number one source for all your sports betting stats and info. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's basketball playoffs, which are going on right now, of course, and the start of the Major League Baseball season, the Toronto Blue Jays, baby. The Raptors are out. The Blue Jays are amazing. Why don't you go and put some long-distance money on Alek Manoah winning the Cy Young? He's like 4-0. And is untouchable right now, that could be a way you win some money to make yourself feel a little bit happier about the state of the Raptors at the end of this season. Also, you should be happy about the state of the Raptors anyway. They're really good, which we'll get to in the podcast. However, BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering info, from live betting, playoff, esports, and more. Just go to the website today or use your mobile device and learn more about the trends and the action. BetOnline is where the game starts. All right, let's continue on here and dig into my box score notes for the various guys who played for the Raptors in this one. We should start with Pascal Siakam, who finished with 24 points, 7 boards, 7 assists, 3 steals, 9 of 17 from the field, 44 minutes. I mean, yeah, the Raptors lost this game in part because Siakam was unable to score at the rate he did in the first half. He had 18 first half points. He was just dynamite in the first half, and it dried up for him in the second half. But the Sixers were allowed to do that because the Raptors just had no shooting to speak of around Pascal Siakam. Over the last three games in this series, the Raptors hit 8, 8, and 7 threes on 34, 31, and 35 attempts. It's just not going to get it done. And that was the case a lot when we saw things go wrong for the Raptors this season. Siakam does everything to set the table. There's just not the finishing out there right now. And I guess that speaks to things you want to see from the Raptors in the offseason address, but that's a question for another day. Either way, I thought Siakam was really great in this one. Not as good defensively as you typically would see, but the whole defense kind of was out of sorts because they were always over-rotating, always having to sort of have an extra guy at a position because James Harden was forcing them to and pulling them out of the single coverage they've been working in for the last couple games, and that had been working really well. And again, that all kind of goes back to James Harden deciding not to be a pumpkin for a day. Good for him. No super Kevins. They're not pre-recorded ad reads. I do them on the fly. I'm a pro. Pascal Siakam was awesome. I really have nothing bad to say about him. I feel like any sort of questions about his viability as a 1-1A, whatever the hell you want to say about it, the postseason, very, very comfortably answered in this postseason. He, of course, is the linchpin for the Raptors' defense in a lot of ways as well. And I'm really excited to see more Pascal Siakam next season, hopefully with a little bit more shooting around him and a little bit more in terms of support. And hopefully you get that Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam pick and roll with a Scottie Barnes cutting baseline, and we can kind of see that full thing in action the way it did work at a lot of times this season. We just never really got to see the full-fledged Siakam VanVleet duo in the back part of the season, unfortunately. Again, nothing bad to say about Pascal. He was really good. He just, I think, kind of ran out of gas by the end because he was seeing all of the attention from the Sixers, whether it was when he was driving in and seeing two bodies or three bodies when he got within 18 feet, or whether it was when he was getting trapped at the top of the pick and roll and forced to give it up. And there were some possessions that were truly maddening. Like, there was one where Pascal gets trapped. He passes it over to Gary Trent Jr. There's like an easy swing up to the top of the arc for a three. Trent kind of toils around with it for a second, kicks it to the corner. Chris Boucher tries to drive and it doesn't work out. Just a pretty miserable set of decision making after Pascal got rid of it. But Pascal did a good job dealing with the traps and things like that. Just 3 turnovers to 7 assists. That is going to be the sort of thing that keeps him afloat as a star, right? Is, are you able to handle that extra attention? And Siakam was all season long. This was another example of it. It's just a shame he didn't have the supporting and finishing talent around him in this game to really get the job done. OG Anunoby, tough game for him. Just 5 points, 2 of 7, had foul trouble early on. A couple ticky-tack things here and there. It's a bummer, but it is the way it is. I don't think anything from this game detracts from what OG is as a player or what he means to this team. I think we saw all season long, the defense he provides is incredible. And look, is he going to be a guy who is a self-creation guy who's, you know, going to carry a 28% usage and be a star for you? Probably not. Not everybody can be that, and there's something to be said for the guy whose floor and or ceiling and or just sort of the guy that he is a wonderful third or fourth option who is an otherworldly defender who can hit threes at 40%. That's a hell of a basketball player for $18 million a year. I want to hear no, oh God, get rid of OG, any of that nonsense. Like, yeah, he had a bad game. Yeah, it's sometimes a bit of an awkward fit in terms of the offensive hierarchy at times. But for the most part, I think OG was fantastic this season. And he, to me, has just sort of solidified himself as, like, that guy is the kind of guy you need on a championship team. I have kind of thought all along, and this feels sacrilege to say because everybody loves the Suns and everyone loves Mikal Bridges, but like, you swap OG and Mikal Bridges, they're one and the same, and maybe even a little bit better down in Phoenix if you have OG Anunoby in place of Mikal Bridges for the extra size and just like the beef he provides. I really think like that's the kind of air you're talking about, and no great team gets by without Mikal Bridges's and OG Anunoby's on their team. So yeah, bummer game for him, but certainly not like a one that derails any optimism or anything like that. Scottie Barnes in this game led the team in shots with 20, took 7 threes, like I said, as well. Not what you necessarily want, but it was nice that he was willing to take them. 18 points, 7 boards, 3 assists, and a steal as well. You know, minus 33, he was on the floor for a lot of those bad moments, was getting torched on defense, like I said, alongside Gary Trent Jr. But hey, man, he's 20 years old. He's Scottie freaking Barnes. I can't be worried. The whole reason this season has been such a joy is that having Scottie Barnes play the way he has is just such a beautiful, beautiful bit of gravy. Like, everything is gravy on top of that, I should say. It sort of is the baseline for a successful season, is Scottie Barnes looking the way he has. And he had some real, real moments in this game as well. ISO Joel Embiid back-to-back possessions and scored. He's really, like, flourishing and blossoming in front of our eyes. And this was 1 year of it. He's 20 years old. He's not 22 until August. I'm bloody excited for what the future of Scottie Barnes is. I really can't be upset about his performance tonight. Just a really, really promising season overall. And the fact that he was playing out there, he was hobbled pretty clearly in this one. The ankle seemed to be bothering. We took a couple of bad landings and things like that. Still kept on gritting it out. What can you say about Scottie Barnes other than this guy is going to be the real deal someday? Showed very much that he is like a playoff ass player in this postseason as well. It's a shame we missed a couple of games of Scottie in the postseason, just as viewers who want to see Scottie Barnes play basketball, but really cool that he got back and really awesome that he got three whole games on the other side of the injury of playoff basketball, which didn't seem like it was going to be the case earlier on in the series when they were down 3-0 and he was still sidelined. So it's not at all lost cause when it comes to development or anything like that. You got to see Scottie on the biggest stage, and I think the early returns pretty promising. Ken Birch just played 5 minutes in this one. Look, he was kind of the thumb that's the sort of ugly big thumb that stuck out. Really disappointing, obviously, that Kem had the season that he did. It was not the season you want for Ken Birch. You know, he had the injuries. He got hit in the face of 10,000 times. Didn't quite have a clear role within the team, sort of oscillated back and forth between ninth man and starter and ceremonial starter and guy who played heavier minutes than you wanted him to, playing ahead of Precious Achiuwa, etc. You know, for Ken Birch, though, you know, he's on a pretty reasonable contract. He's a nice guy to have around. He's nice depth at the big man spot. Even if I don't think he should be part of the main rotation next season necessarily or in the starting five, it's not like it's an albatross contract or anything like that. And I would expect that he's back. And there's really nothing to be all upset about. Gary Trent Jr. in this game, 19 points, 7-15. The first quarter, we got to give some love to Gary Trent Jr. because if the Raptors had won this game, it would have been because of the work he and Chris Boucher did in the first quarter of this game. When the offense for the Raptors, you think the offense was bad in the third quarter? It was just as bad in the first quarter. They just happened to get like a million offensive rebounds and putbacks and bailout shots from Gary Trent Jr. The zone in particular was really bugging them in the early going in this game. The zone kind of went away as the game went along, and they went to more of a sort of just send all of the bodies at Pascal and dare them to shoot threes style defense. But the zone in the first quarter was a nightmare for the Raptors to deal with. They could not figure it out. And Gary Trent Jr. and Chris Boucher sort of did the job to fill in the gaps. Look, Gary had a rough defensive game, and I think his sort of defensive reputation has rightfully taken a bit of a hit down the backstretch of the season. I don't think he is the sort of guy that we saw in the first couple weeks of the season where he was just this menace all over the place. He's certainly great at sort of hunting for steals and things like that, jumping passing lanes, which is necessary for what the Raptors want to do. And all season long, he was a huge bellwether for the Raptors on offense. When he was on the floor, the Raptors' offense performed well. It just basically was clockwork. It was Siakam and Trent who were the guys who drove offensive performance more than anybody else. In this game, though, really rough defense, and that led to everything else kind of dissipating. And honestly, six threes, not enough for Gary Trent Jr. in this game, where zone busting was needed and just shot making was needed. Not nearly enough three-point attempts from Gary Trent Jr. in this one. Way too many of those sort of probing drives where he's just kind of overcome by length and arms. He's not athletic enough to overcome it and score through it. So a bit disappointing there, but I don't think Gary Trent Jr. is any sort of albatross or anything like that. I think he's a very nice player on this team. And honestly, my offseason agenda is going to be Gary Trent Jr. as sixth man for next year. Get him in that sixth man of the year conversation. He feels like a guy who could win that award very comfortably. And I think that's maybe his sort of best destiny with this team. But the fact that they were able to rely on him for 40 minutes in this game, and he was sort of their savior on offense in a lot of situations, you got to give him some credit for that. A nice season for Gary Trent Jr. and a hot and cold game six, I would say. But you know, this series turned around when Gary Trent Jr. got healthy again. I don't think that's a surprise. He's a very important element of this team, especially for a team that doesn't have a ton of shooting. Do you want to be as dependent on Gary Trent's shooting as they are? Probably not. You wish you'd have some more options to go to. But hey, he had a pretty damn good season all told. And for me, I wasn't really sold on him coming into the year as like a guy who would be part of the future. I think at 23 years old, doing what he did this year, I'm more than happy to see more of Gary Trent Jr. going forward, even if I think The sixth man of the year destiny is like kind of very much in his future. You need six men of the year. You need guys who can come in and just be walking buckets. And I kind of think that might be Gary Trent Jr.'s future. But for now, played a lot of minutes, 40 minutes tonight. And again, hot and cold. The defense really was a problem on James Harden. But credit to him, he did a pretty damn good job on Harden for most of the series. So eventually that dam was going to break. Other quick notes here on guys from this game. Thad Young, pretty quiet, just 0-4, 7 boards though, and 2 assists. And those 2 assists were, I think, both to Chris Boucher cutting. Those two guys, love that simpatico. Please stay in Toronto, Thad Young. We want to see more of those kick-ass passes. Either way, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, the trade was worth it. He was an effective player for this team. He helped work along the young guys. The young guys spoke glowingly of how he was basically the team dad when he walked in. Really fit the ethos of the team. I hope we see more of Thad Young going forward. But if this was the last game for Thad Young as a Raptor, you at least got some kick-ass cool passes, even though he did not hit any shots in this one, unfortunately. And again, it was kind of part of that offensive slowdown in the third quarter where he had to be in there for his defense and in there to sort of, you know, man the line, but he just didn't have enough offensive juice, missed some threes, like the 2 threes he missed. Anytime Thad puts up a 3, it feels like it's kind of a momentum swinger. And when he missed them, it was really, really tough as the Raptors were trying to claw back in that third quarter after going down really, really quickly. Chris Boucher, boy, oh boy. What a game for Chris Boucher in this one. Much like Gary Trent Jr. was the reason the Raptors even had a shot at this one after their miserable first quarter where the offense just looked completely cooked and the defense was totally out of sorts. He was the reason they were able to stay afloat. He had 3 offensive boards in that first quarter alone. Finished with just 3 on the night. The Raptors had 15 in the game. They did get back to their possession battle gaming thing in this one, but just didn't quite have the juice. And, you know, Boucher putting up 3s, 2 of 6 from downtown. I'm kind of the mind that Boucher's 3-point shot is somewhere between the 39% we saw last year and the 29-ish percent we saw this year. He kind of got a little bit hotter near the end of the season and looked pretty decent in the postseason. I think there's some hope there for Chris Boucher as a shooter somewhere here, but yeah, just, wasn't quite enough. And when you're relying on 32 minutes of Chris Boucher, because he was like your 3rd most effective player on the night. That's not an indictment of Chris Boucher. Hell yeah to him. He was incredible, but that kind of speaks to the lack of options the Raptors had in this one, where just too many guys had off nights. You know, I'll go back to the quote Nick Nurse had after the first game of the series, where he spoke at length about how this Raptors team needs to have everyone kind of playing at least average for them to have a shot, because it is all so interconnected. And there were just too many guys who were not average. That said, Chris Boucher, well above average in this one. And, we'll talk. We have plenty of time to litigate offseason stuff and free agency and things like that. But I really do hope we see Chris Boucher back with the Raptors. He just fits the team and the ethos so well. And honestly, for him, like, where else would he be at home as much as he is with this Raptors team? In terms of the way he plays, in terms of the things he does, the Raptors are a team that hunts offensive rebounds and plays maniacs, fly all over the place defense. That seems like the Chris Boucher dreamland. And so hopefully there's a deal to be made there to bring him back. Because he was fantastic. And then the last guy to talk about here, other than the garbage time guys, was Precious Achiuwa. Had himself a rough one. This was one of the downslopes of the Precious Achiuwa roller coaster ride, sadly. And, you know, look, it happens, man. He's 22 years old. There's going to be some moments where it kind of reverts back to things you don't want to see. Some pretty, you know, doomed offensive possessions, I'd say, where he over-dribbled, looked for something that wasn't there, tried to go with Joel Embiid, sort of heat-checking himself from the last game where he cooked him multiple times in the half court in isolation situations. Embiid was way more on it today. The Sixers were way more sort of locked in and sort of on a string defensively as well, and it just wasn't there for Precious Achiuwa, and he wasn't catching them by surprise anymore, right? You know, he only took 2 threes in this game as well, missed them both. I have very, very high hopes for Precious Achiuwa. This was not his best performance. The defense was pretty, I don't want to say weak, but it was just not at the same sort of menacing level it's been throughout this series. And Joel Embiid kind of got where he wanted to go. A lot more deep post position for Joel Embiid. The Raptors have done such a good job of preventing him from getting within that 6 to 8 foot range where he's more or less just dropping the ball into the basket. And Precious obviously shares a pretty big role in that. Just 22 minutes for him and then this one as well, as Boucher summarily outplayed him, I would say. So tough finish for Precious, but my God, I think he is the answer at center going forward. The defense from this guy, it is otherworldly. He can guard anybody on the floor at any time. as long as they can continue to refine these things, work on the decision making, and work on that 3-point shot, which was so, so encouraging down the backstretch of the season, Precious Achiuwa, to me, I go into next season with him as my starting center. I move Gary Trent Jr. to the bench to live out his Gunner destiny, and I think that's sort of how I'm going with the top six on the roster. There doesn't have to be a whole lot of changes. It's just internal development you're banking on, and I think if you're banking on internal development, Precious Achiuwa is a damn good guy to bank on, considering what he's done over the course of this season. You know, he looked tonight a little bit like the early season version of Precious, but this is the performance that's been so few and far between, considering what he's done lately and the sort of the routine, like, I don't know, unbelievable performances where you're just kind of being jaw on the floor at what he's doing. You know, I have no qualms about what Precious Achiuwa did this season. Tough finish for him. Tough finish for everybody, man. Like, it's a bummer. The guys after the game in the press conferences seemed a little bit dejected because of the way it went down. You lose by 35 in the last game. That's never going to be the most fun way to go out. But, you know, it is what it is, man. It's how it goes. I wrote last week after game three that the Raptors are here in the playoffs to get punched in the mouth and learn from it. They got punched in the mouth tonight, man. It's nice that post had some staying power and some shelf life, thankfully. No, none of my posts ever do because they're bad. All right, we're going to continue on. On the other side, going to reflect a little bit on the season, of course, and then also take your questions. So if you have questions, please drop them into the chat. I look forward to answering them coming up on the other side. But first, I got to tell you about our friends over at Built Bar, who are making the best tasting protein bars you can find anywhere. If you are a Built Bar, if you are a person who just like needs the meal replacement or something like that, you're looking for something to be a breakfast replacement, you don't want to have that heavy like breakfast that's weighing you down or something like that, or you want something to power through a workout, Built Bar is a wonderful way to go. Most of their bars contain 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 grams of net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. It's about half the calories of your standard candy bar, and it's about an eighth of the sugar as well. So you gotta get up on that. Like, that's, you're putting so much sugar in your body if you're eating Mr. Biggs all the time. And look, as someone who eats a lot of Mr. Biggs, I've done a nice thing. It's sort of replaced that part of my diet with Built Bars in the last couple years here since Built Bar started working with us, and I stand by them. I am not a person who likes protein bars most of the time. You give me a Clif Bar, I'm spitting that thing out because it tastes like sand. That is not the case with Built Bar. It tastes like a candy bar, has the mouthfeel of a candy bar, and you get all sorts of great flavors like banana cream pie, raspberry, double chocolate, so many more. They got limited time flavors that pop up all the time as well. So go check them out. Use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. That's the promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED15, for 15% off at Built.com. All right, let's dig in now to some mailbag questions. Probably going to be a little bit eulogy heavy, I suppose, in this one, talking about the end of the season, wrapping things up. And we should note, this is a daily podcast. It will remain a daily podcast through the end of free agency. So, we're going to talk about all of this stuff. We've got player reviews coming up. We've got the over-under special with Vivek and Sahal that we are going to review our preseason over-under picks. That is going to be a bloodbath, I think, for me. But either way, that's coming up. We'll have lots of fun guests and fun concept episodes and stuff like that throughout the offseason. So we're not going anywhere. We're going to address all of these questions, I'm sure, in the form of full episodes. But from Russo Man, asking, any chance of getting both Boucher and Thad back? Should I want that as much as I do? I absolutely think there's a chance they bring both guys back. I think Boucher, like I said, he's at a perfect home here with the Raptors. He's developed into a perfect Raptors-type player, and the Raptors should be incentivized to want him back because there's not endless 6'9" guys who can play the Raptors scheme falling off of trees, especially in free agency. And so, yeah, I think the Raptors will be incentivized to want to bring him back, and I don't see really any reason why that should be too difficult a negotiation. I know you're always worried about other teams with cap space and stuff like that, but there's not that many teams with cap space, number one. And Chris Boucher, as good as he's been, is not really the kind of guy that a team goes and splurges on with their cap space, right? Like, that is sort of a move where, you know, if you have $20 million in cap space, throwing $18 million at Chris Boucher, probably not the best use of your assets, especially since he's 29. He's a guy who's probably way more valuable to the Raptors than he is to most other teams. And hopefully the Raptors realize that and pay him as such. I am all in on the tank. And look, I will say, I was so far out of Chris Boucher and that business a year ago, 8 months ago. I remember on this very podcast back in the 2019-20 season, the day before, or it was the day of the game against the Lakers, where him and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson kind of made their first appearance in the Raptors rotation. I was fully convinced. I think I tweeted that day, Chris Boucher is just not an NBA player as much as we would like him to be. And I've been proven extremely wrong. He's been fantastic this season, completely reworked the type of player he is, and he is 100% the type of guy the Raptors should be looking to bring back because he fits the ethos of what this team wants. And like I said, I think there's a bounce back for his three-point percentage coming as well, based on how he finished the season, based on how he shot in Tampa. I don't think he's a 28% shooter. And even if he is, he's one of the best offensive rebounders in the NBA, and he's an incredible athletic defender who fits what the Raptors want to do. When it comes to Thad Young, I think I still maintain optimism he's back because the very first press conference Masai Ujiri had after trading for him, he said, "We got his bird rights." That, to me, suggests that's something they were thinking of when they went and traded for Thad Young, and I could really see them wanting to bring Thad Young back because, again, he fits what the Raptors want to do. There's some rumblings maybe from, I know I talked to some people from Chicago and Bulls fans who I'm friendly with. There seems to be like an inclination among Bulls fans that he's going back to Chicago on a minimum deal or something like that. Sounded like he really loved playing in Chicago, and boy, the Bulls could certainly use a guy like Thad. But if there's a bidding war, I hope the Raptors take part in it because he fits this Raptors team very, very nicely. You don't want to get too crazy, obviously, for a guy who's 33 or whatever it is, but you know, it's not just the on-court stuff and the aesthetically pleasing passes and flip shots and stuff like that too. You know, Thad Young is a guy who everybody respects, and that matters. Like, we can talk about quantifying everything and, you know, leadership and locker room chemistry. Does it actually matter? When the players start saying that they think it matters, man. Whether it's real, whether it's fool's gold, whether it's a placebo effect or not, if they think it matters to them, it absolutely matters for sure, without a doubt. And so I hope Thad's back. And I think the Thad-Boucher combo off the bench with future Sixth Man of the Year, Gary Trent Jr., mix in a little Justin Champagne, mix in a little Malachi Flynn or someone that can bring it on the MLE. I think that's great. The beautiful part about this offseason is that it should be very chill. There should not be that much the Raptors have to do. Internal development is going to be the big thing. I think you might get most of the shooting you're looking for because of internal development from guys like Precious Achiuwa, a bounce back from Boucher. Maybe Scotty Barnes gets some touch and becomes a 35% shooter as opposed to a 30% shooter, a 31% shooter. That's all on the table here, very much so. And so, yeah, I think this should be a pretty chill offseason. If they can bring back Boucher and Thad, I consider that a successful offseason, honestly. That's really all I need to see. Let this thing marinate. It's okay to be patient and give it some time. If a big trade presents itself, sure, you got to entertain it, of course, but I don't really think it's all that necessary. And Boucher and Thad, to me, bringing those guys back is how you get a successful offseason, I think, in the tank. Let's get this next question from Frisson. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it with the proper French inflection, but what's the team ceiling if they keep the same personnel and just bank on development? You know, this is a different question, I guess, depending on how far in the future you're looking. If you're looking 5 years down the line, I think this team is on a track where it can be a title contender by sometime in the range of Scotty Barnes' rookie contract or just beyond that. In terms of next season, like, they won 48 games this season, despite having a bad start, tons of injuries, guys missing time, COVID spells. Everyone had COVID spells, but still, this was a team that didn't really hit fifth gear until January, February. Over a full season, I think you can go in and expect 50 wins next season. As you know, right, sitting here right now, we don't know what the roster is going to look like, obviously, but if they can bring back the same roster, bank on internal development from guys like Scotty and Precious, this does feel like a team that can comfortably win 50 games. The Eastern Conference is going to be a bear, right? Like, the Bucks are amazing. Sadly, the goddamn Celtics are not going anywhere, and Jason Tatum is amazing, and it makes me sad every time I think about it because, God, the Celtics are just odious, but just the way it is. You get that. You've also got, of course, the Miami Heat aren't going anywhere, at least for not right now. The Nets should be better next year, probably. I don't know. Who the hell knows? The Sixers are not going anywhere. Maybe they have some decline if Harden starts really showing his age, but like, this is going to be a bear of a conference. The Hawks should be better. Maybe the Hornets are better. The Cavs are going to be a monster probably as well. Like, it's going to be a battle. The Eastern Conference is tough, and I don't know if you can base it sort of on like how many wins they get and where they get in the postseason, at least sitting here a year out right now, as to like what success will be. We have to see how the whole conference lines up, but I think for sure, like, the ceiling for this team next season is, you know, there was a world this year where they get through the Sixers series, which, by the way, they outplayed the Sixers in three of the six games and very much had a pathway to winning this series that always existed, even though the Raptors had the tough start. There's a lot of health problems there, obviously. They had like five guys available for game two. There's a world in which the Raptors win this series, and then we saw them play the Heat this season. The Heat are annoying. They're a team of bastards in the best possible way, but that's what the Raptors are too. There's a world in which the Raptors win that series and make the conference final. That was their like high, high absolute ceiling. I think conference finals is kind of their ceiling next year as well. Finals obviously is very tough to make, and it requires so much luck to get there, as well as skill and talent and everything breaking your way. But I think a conference finals appearance next season, you know, might be a little bit ahead of schedule, and you don't want to get too crazy, right? Because this team was ahead of schedule. If they don't take the same huge leap next year, that doesn't mean that they're behind schedule or anything like that. They're probably just more in line with schedule. I would say I would expect probably a second round appearance next season, but a conference finals appearance certainly feels like it's on the table to me, considering what we saw in terms of growth and considering Scotty Barnes is the goddamn truth. Let's go with a question here from Matt T. Is there any hope for Malachi Flynn to be the backup point guard? Flynn's offense was so bad in this series, but I'd try somebody else. Russo, man, also looking who to look into in place of Malachi Flynn. Look, Malachi Flynn had some moments this season. He had that stretch just after the All-Star break when Fred was hurt, where he looked really, really good. And the shot making was there. And the shot making is the thing with Malachi Flynn. You know, pick and roll offense, sure, but the Raptors are just not a pick and roll team. And maybe that's unfair that he was drafted into a team that doesn't really do the thing that he did best, but that's just them's the breaks. He's also not 6'9" and seems to maybe not be part of like the overall sort of general tone and tenor of the team. Either way, having a backup point guard next season will be incredibly important. There's no doubt about that. And we'll talk about this, I'm sure, at length on the podcast throughout the summer. But, you know, I think there's a world in which Malachi Flynn has played his last game as a Raptor, whether he's used in a trade or something like that. They just kind of move on from him. I don't really know. But, yeah, it's a bummer. He hasn't really had an opportunity. It's been stop and start. But also when he's had opportunities outside of that 1-4-game stretch before he got hurt, he hasn't really seized anything. Earlier in the season, he had some run. He started a few games, didn't do anything to seize those minutes and really become the backup point guard that you can trust. Postseason, obviously, he had some nice moments guarding James Harden in a couple of games, but the offense, again, to the point where in a game like tonight, where the Raptors were desperately needing any sort of three-point shooting, there wasn't even a look to Malachi Flynn on the bench of coming into the game. Obviously, a high-stakes game, a do-or-die game. Maybe you don't want to go to Malachi Flynn. You'll just go down with the guys that got you there. But there was not even a sense that he might come into this game to help bust the zone or help when they were really kind of down and trying to, you know, just cut into the lead. And to me, yeah, I think there's a world in which he's not back. Matt T, I like what you're saying with DeLon Wright. I love DeLon Wright. He is the delight. I love him the most, and it will be awesome to bring him back. Tyus Jones is going to make bank if he's a free agent, if he's available. Like, the Grizzlies should be bringing him back. He's fantastic. He's maybe the best backup point guard in the league. If you can get him, great. I just don't know if that's really within the Raptors' budget, especially if they bring Boucher and Thad back. They're only really going to have the mid-level exception to work with, so you're kind of going a little bit lower than that Tyus Jones tier. Maybe they draft somebody at 33. I could see them potentially looking at like a 4-year point guard in the draft. I have no draft knowledge right now. That'll be another thing we do in the coming weeks and months, of course, but when it comes to the backup point guard spot, look, I'm not like a dyed in the wool, you got to have a backup point guard who's 6'1" and it is like, is your Anthony Carter or your Derek Martin type or whatever. I don't think that's necessary, especially when you have Pascal Siakam and Scotty Barnes to handle the ball. But I think in whatever way, shape, or form it is, whether it's a 6'9 guy who handles the ball, maybe it's Delano Banton, for example, maybe it's some other guy who's like a 6'5 wing who can handle the ball a little bit. You just got to get more ball handling so you can rest Fred VanVleet. That's what you need. It doesn't have to be a dyed-in-the-wool point guard or anything like that. Just has to be somebody who can handle the freaking ball and make it so Fred VanVleet can play 32 minutes as opposed to 39, because he has proven just by being a 6-foot point guard, he's going to break down if he plays that many minutes. And we saw it this season. This very much felt like the 2014-15 Kyle Lowry season. And it's just, you know, you have to learn from that, like the Raptors did with Kyle Lowry. And they eventually did, and they really learned to manage his load over the course of time. Took him a couple years after that, frankly, for them to really figure it out. But that's something to really work with. With Delano Banton, just to answer Frisson's question here, you know, really good things to say about his G League performance, for sure. From Nick Nurse, from everybody who watched him, he was fantastic. He might be that answer. And that's why I say you don't really need necessarily a 6-foot point guard in the sort of typical mold. Maybe Delano Banton is just the point guard. I do think shooting will be necessary from Delano Banton, for sure. In some way, shape, or form, there has to be a threat there, at least. There was no threat for him shooting threes this season. No threat, really, for him to pull up. It was really just him getting to the basket by being super fast. And when teams figured that out, it kind of made it so it was a pretty limited thing you're going to see. You know, like, you just only so much you can do. So we have to see if there's some actual real refinement of Banton's game. I'm sure they'll give him a shot. They'll give him a look because he fits the mold of what a Raptors player is at 6'9", flying around like a maniac all the time, super fast, could run transition with the best of them. But yeah, he's going to have to have a little bit more refinement when it comes to his half-court game if there is going to be hope of Delano Banton being an actual backup point guard for this team. Either way, like, again, I don't know if it's necessarily a thing where the backup point guard is a thing they badly need because they can have Siakam handle. Scottie Barnes was drafted as a point guard. He's going to handle the ball, I would think, a lot more next season. They just need someone to help soak up some of those Fred minutes, and it might just be Scottie Barnes. Maybe they get more bigs and wings so they can really just play Scottie as a backup point guard or play Pascal Siakam as the backup point guard and manage it that way, you know. And if they want to sort of maintain the vision that they're building here, that might actually be the way they go. Just get more wings who can shoot, and then you can, you know, defer some of the ball handling duties to guys who can fill in for Fred. But yeah, like, they got to have a little bit more ball handling, a little bit more shooting for sure. But the thing is, I think a lot of the internal development is going to sort of take care of the shooting in a lot of ways. I think Precious, you're probably going to count on as a good shooter. We even saw as the playoffs went along, you know, the Sixers started really worrying about him as a three-point shooter to the point that he was blowing by Joel Embiid on closeouts. And that matters. When teams start guarding you, that's what your shooting is really all about. You can shoot all you want. If teams aren't guarding you, it doesn't change the spacing of the floor. Teams started caring about Precious Achiuwa as a shooter. I look forward to that hopefully carrying over next season. And I think Scottie Barnes will have some sort of uptick, whether it's to 33 or 34, 36%. Maybe that's shooting too high, but I think that's going to sort of help fill in the gaps here with the three-point shooting too. So shooting, ball handling, in terms of like backup guy who can fill in for Fred, those are kind of the two needs, but really should be a pretty chill offseason for the Raptors, which is nice. Might not make for the most interesting in terms of like big drama in the offseason, but that's nice after many, many offseasons of high drama with Toronto, with Kyle Lowry and Gasol and Ibaka leaving and Kawhi leaving and DeMar getting traded. Like, it's not been a chill offseason for years. I'm looking forward to something pretty relaxing myself. Either way, all through the offseason, I'm going to be here. I'm going to wrap up the show here, but we'll be back again on Monday. Me and Vivek Jacob are going to do sort of a retrospective on the season on Monday, sort of do a big picture look back on all the things that took place this year. And then we're going to start player reviews. We're going to dig into every single player on the team, do an episode for each and every one of them. Maybe like an episode, and like, you know, we'll do three bench guys per episode or something like that once we get down to the deep reaches of the roster. But that will be what we do over the next little while here, next couple of weeks. Then we've got draft stuff. We've got free agency. We've got, you know, just keeping an eye on the rest of the playoffs, I suppose, too. We'll have a Kyle Lowry minute, I'm sure, on the podcast to keep tabs on what he's doing as he takes on the Sixers. Go Heat, baby. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Heat fan now. I can't wait. But either way, that's going to do it for today's show. Thank you for bearing with the technical difficulties off the top. That's much appreciated. Sorry about that taking place. If you missed it because of that, I apologize. You can hear the podcast, of course, in the morning. That's going to be available in audio in the morning time. And thanks so much for following along with the show this season. You know, for if you're on the stream, amazing. If you're listening to this or watching this at a later date, I really can't thank you enough for being a part of the show. This was as big a year as we've ever had, right up there with the title season in terms of downloads and reach and engagement and all that stuff. And the video element has been a really fun thing too, and I'm glad to be with my ugly mug here on your camera talking to you every day. So thanks so much. Not going anywhere, of course. It's only going to get bigger and better from here, and we'll leave it there for now. If you're looking for more stuff on the NBA and the NBA playoffs and the end of the series, go check out Locked On NBA. It's our daily NBA show here at Locked On, and they do a wonderful job. Also on YouTube, also on all the podcast apps, so you can go check that out. And with that, I'll leave you there. Thank you so much for being a listener, and we will talk to you again on Monday with another episode of Locked On Raptors. Thanks. Bye-bye.